What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series. Hi, I'm JR.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking, and, well, there's a bit of a funny story about this week's essay.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, this is from Stephen Hatcher, and Stephen Hatcher initially sent us one reading of one of his essays, and then when I said, oh, that was great, send us some more, and he sent them via a Dropbox folder, which he linked me to on Facebook, and Facebook Messenger only told me initially that there were two essays in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, I was doing some sort of housekeeping, as it were, and I went back to the folder and discovered, actually, there were five in there.
Ah, wow. The motherlode.
Yeah, so there were three extra essays I had no clue about. So, you know, obviously, the first thing I did was download them to find out what they were. And actually, this is a bit of a treat, this one, because this is from one of the books that we haven't actually covered yet.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's written an essay for the forthcoming book on David Bowie. And I thought of the three essays that I discovered. I mean, all three of them are great subjects and great essays. But I thought we should do this one first so we get a bit of David Bowie under our belts.
Far out. Yes, the Bowie one. We haven't touched on that at all in all these episodes we've done so far. So yes, very excited to be hearing this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And this is an interesting... Well, I shan't spoil too much about it, but it's kind of about how he got into music, you know, full stop, as well as David Bowie, the way he treats this essay. And I think, well, that's one of those interesting things, because a lot of people don't just sort of drift into pop music. It's kind of a sort of conscious thing where they sort of, you know, when you're young, when you're 10, 11, 12, whatever, you sort of feel your way into various types of music and you will sample various kinds of different things out before you really sort of settle on the things you like, won't you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And it just calls to mind a question. JR, do you have a favourite Bowie? Do you like the long-haired Bowie in a dress or Ziggy Stardust or the Thin White Duke or the Low and Lodger era in Berlin or the early 80s stuff in the suits and Tin Machine? Well, we'll gloss over that one. Labyrinth David Bowie, perhaps? Do you have a favourite David Bowie?
I've got to confess, I'm not the biggest David Bowie fan, which is to say... David Bowie is one of those things where I absolutely love the singles, but I've never got around to sort of getting into the albums.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things I can't understand it, but I've never actually sort of got around to doing anything about it, if you know what I mean. So I absolutely love David Bowie, but I don't have enough knowledge of him to sort of answer your question, to be honest. I tell you what I really like. Life on Mars and Space Oddity and all the ones. I think I quite like the sort of slightly sci-fi tinged ones because he uses sci-fi in a way, you know, like sci-fi is supposed to be used in a metaphor to describe things about himself. How about you, Rob? Your favourite Bowie?
It's really hard because he has... There's almost two Bowies. There's like the singles Bowie, where every single is just fantastic. Then there's the albums, Bowie, where the albums could be quite different. And just lately, I've been listening to Low a lot, which is a fairly electronic album. Not all of the tracks have singing on them, for example.
Oh, and wow.
It's a very interesting album to put on when I'm doing work or even playing certain computer games. I'll have it on in the background, almost as background music. It fits that role pretty well. But, oh, look, I could go all over the place. I love all his stuff, except for Tin Machine.
I think doing the introduction for this podcast will have to be the impetus I need to go out and rectify my David Bowie shortfalls.
It's such a rich back catalogue, you know. I recommend actually maybe reading up and trying to dig into an area you think you might like and spreading out from there, perhaps.
Yeah, good idea. Right, in the meantime then, shall we see what Stephen Hatcher has to say about how he got into David Bowie?
I think we should.
Italian Changes, Hunky Dory in Turin, by Stephen Hatcher. In 1979, I spent 6 months as a student in Italy, a period that had a profound impact upon me intellectually, emotionally and culturally. It was a time that has resonated with me ever since, during that brief period in that flat in Turin, accompanied by fellow British students Keris, Andrea, Gabriella, Simon and his girlfriend Bev, together with Alberto, the flat's former sole occupant and son of our landlady, I turned and faced many strange changes. Alberto was a kind and welcoming Sicilian, slightly older than us, who was unstintingly generous in allowing access to his state-of-the-art stereo system and his extensive record collection. It was here that I found the music that I continue to treasure and to listen to this day. I'd already discovered Genesis and Yes. Now I found Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, the Italian singer-songwriter Lucio Dalla, and of course David Bowie. I devoured record after record, listening to Alberto's or buying my own copies. They were much cheaper in Italy than in the UK. Catching up on all those wonderful albums that I had missed for all those years, and which had formed the soundtrack to my life ever since. Among them all, I played one album constantly, returning to it again and again, David Bowie's Hunky Dory. I suppose that growing up I was a bit different to the other children of my age. I was born in 1958, in the English Midlands, the eldest son of a father who was a factory worker and trades union activist, and a mother who had stopped working to marry my dad, and was, for most of my childhood, a stay-at-home mum. I probably took after my father in that I was never one to follow the herd. Indeed, I was quite happy to be different from my friends and classmates. I'm sure this helped to make me who I am today, but at the same time, it did mean that my classmates never really influenced me. So it was that as they were listening to all of the great music that came out of that extraordinary decade, I was having none of it. The great social and cultural changes of the 60s went on, observed by me, but very much at a distance. There was no place for that music at home, either. My dad was an avid modern jazz fan, with a large record collection featuring names such as Duke Ellington, Stan Kent and Buddy Rich and so on, none of which held much of an attraction for me. It was these sounds which filled the evenings and weekends, while during the days my mother, who had a casual interest in the popular music of the 1950s, especially the American crooner Nat King Cole, would put on the BBC Light programme. Very little of the popular music of my childhood years made much of an impression upon me. Of course, I was aware of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and I would say that She Loves You was probably the first pop song that I remember hearing. Yeah, no thanks. Neither was I impressed by the long-haired, hedonistic lifestyle of those pop stars. The whole 60s thing really rather passed me by. At the age of 10, inspired by listening to Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture in primary school, I fell under the spell of classical music, much to the bafflement of my parents. And for the next 10 years, my teenage years, I listened to almost nothing but Beethoven, Bach and their fellow dead composers, dismissing and deriding as I did the rock and pop music loved by my peers. However, a very few pieces managed to sneak beneath the protective wall that I'd built around my very individual taste. Pop and rock music was in my life in a very small way, but I could never admit, not to myself and certainly never to anyone else, that I actually liked some of it. Such an intruder upon my consciousness made itself known in the summer of 1973. I remember very clearly sitting in my parents' car on holiday in Ayrshire, Scotland, utterly transfixed despite myself by Bowie's Life on Mars. The fact that earlier the same year the BBC radio adaptation of Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy had made me into a science fiction fan overnight no doubt helped that fabulous song to grab my attention. Looking back, it seems rather sad that it was to be another 6 years before I was to hear the album from which it came. Couldn't last forever. I was to have my taste widened when in 1977, by punk music by the way, I went off to do a degree in modern languages at Sheffield City Polytechnic. Forced to make new friends, the barriers had to come down, and I immediately discovered what I'd been missing. Beginning with a few greatest hits albums, I began cautiously to explore the music of my generation. And so it was that I came to Turin and discovered Hunky Dory. As well as so much more, I embraced those changes. We discovered life on Mars, smiled at the pretty things among our Italian friends, fell in love with and to Cooks, Quicksand and Fill Your Heart, smiled at Bowie's tribute to Andy Warhol and condemnation of Bob Dylan, rocked to Queen Bitch, and just adored the Bewley Brothers. Looking back, I listened to the album over and over. I still can't hear it without becoming instantly 21 again, living in that flat in the red light district of Turin. David Bowie achieved so much during his time among us, and made so much amazing music and so many wonderful memories, but I don't believe he ever made an album just quite so extraordinary as Hunky Dory. For that matter, I'm not sure that anyone else has either, but then perhaps that's just the little piece of 1970s Italy in me talking. And that piece was written for a forthcoming volume in the You and Who series, Me and the Starman.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.